Now, back to a special edition of the Wednesday House Call on 580 CFRA with Rob Snow and Dr. Barry Dworkin, H1N1. What you need to know to protect yourself and your family.
I don't think they got enough clinics, because I noticed on TV that they're lined up in malls and everything else to get it. But the younger people are more septic to it than the older people.
Yes, but I don't think it's a crisis at this point. I think maybe they're making it worse. I think you can be prepared, but I think you can do too much.
Total overreaction.
Well, as far as I know, the vaccine is only available to certain people now, and next week is going to be available to everybody, so I think it's going to handle pretty good.
Yeah, sure, I think so. I haven't really heard much about it, though, except for what I've heard, like, in the news, but it's all concerning, like, other countries not really aware of how they're handling it here in Ottawa. So.
Some of the reaction we got across Ottawa today when we asked the people of Ottawa what they thought of the city's response. CFRA News reporter Anna Drahobsel is standing by. She's at the roving clinic today at the Walter Baker Center in Barrhaven. And coming up shortly, we'll bring you right up to date on the wait times, the number of people in line at the various clinics throughout. But Dr. Barry Dworkin has agreed to stay for another hour, and then he's going to run to karate class.
That's right.
But thank you so much for staying with us in the Hal Anthony studio, and we'll be taking calls and emails up until 6 o'clock. I did want to take Steve's call right now. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, Steve.
Good. Quick question in regards to the reduction of the proliferation of the virus if you've been infected.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot of info lately about gargling with salt water, swabbing your nostrils, etc. Is this effective?
Not really, and the reason is that the virus invades and injects itself into the cells of the respiratory tract and then other cells of your body. Once it's inside those cells, it's protected, and it uses those cells as a factory to produce more virus. So really, once you're infected, there's really very little that can be done to thwart the virus from reproducing, because it has mechanisms to protect itself from anything external.
Bryna. Is it Bryna?
Yes, it is.
Go ahead, Bryna.
Hi. My grandchildren actually were in camp in Nova Scotia. There was a big outbreak of H1N1 mm-hmm. to the extent that they canceled visiting day. All kids there were then given Tamiflu to prevent the outbreak from getting worse. Mm-hmm. My question, do they need the injection, the vaccine, or are they protected now?
No, the Tamiflu was a temporary measure to prevent the virus from replicating in their bodies, but their bodies have cleared the Tamiflu. It's a medication used to prevent the virus from reproducing. But once that Tamiflu is gone, there's nothing in their bodies with regards to protecting them. If we make an assumption that they had H1N1, they may have antibodies, but because no testing was done, it's recommended they have the vaccine, because there's no guarantee that being treated earlier is now conferring any protection at all for them.
Linda on line 4. Linda.
Yes, thank you for taking my question. If you get to the hospital right at the very beginning when your child has trouble breathing, if they have H1N1, and mm-hmm. they're put on a ventilator from the start, is there less of a chance that they would have a serious outcome? Or it's like you say, once it's in the cells, they keep multiplying, and it just takes on a life of its own?
Usually what happens, if we're talking about ventilators, that is putting on a respirator machine in the intensive care unit because the person has reached a point where they cannot breathe on their own, that indicates very serious disease. So there's little that can be done other than supportive measures to provide assistance to the body to continue breathing, keeping fever down, depending on the time that they've come to hospital. So if the assumption is that they've come to hospital within 48 hours and they are really having a tough time, they will likely be put on antiviral medications too. But after 48 hours, antiviral medications don't work very well because the virus has already gone through most of its reproductive cycle and is going to cause the maximum harm. But the ventilators are an assist device. They're there to help someone breathe while their body takes the time to fight off the virus. And so that's essentially what it is. So yes, the earlier you get to a hospital and get assistance, you are providing that person with the support they need, as opposed to waiting a little bit longer and having their condition deteriorate further.
Just before we bring on CFRA News reporter Anna Drohosil, who's standing by at the Walter Baker Center, the clinic in Barrhaven, I did want to run down the fixed clinics that remain open. There's the Orleans Client Service Center, 255 Centrum in Orleans. Hours there, Monday to Friday, 2:30 to 8:30, Saturday and Sunday, 9 to 3. In the Vanier Lower Town area, there's the Vanier Richelieu Community Center on De Père Blanc in Vanier, again, 2:30 to 8:30. During the weekdays, and on the weekend, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Tom Brown Arena, 141 Bayview, 2:30 to 8:30 during the weekdays, and then Saturday and Sunday, 9 to 3. At Constellation, that's in Nepean, 100 Constellation Crescent of the City of Ottawa Administrative Building, 5 p.m. to 9 p.m., Monday to Friday, and then Saturday and Sunday, 9 to 3. And at the Kanata Rec Complex, 100 Walter Baker in Kanata, it's Monday to Friday, 2:30 to 8:30, Saturday and Sunday, 9 to 3. The Roving Clinics, Walter Baker Sports Center, October 28th, that's today, and the 29th, 100 Malvern in Barrhaven, 2:30 to 8:30 in the Fred Barrett Arena, started 2 days ago, run until October 30th, 2:30 to 8:30. Let's bring Anna on now, CFR News reporter Anna Drohosil. And you're at the Walter Baker Center right now in Barrhaven.
I am, yes.
What's it like there right now?
Well, inside, it is a jam-packed scenario. There are many, 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 many people here. And what seems to have happened is the processing has gone, we've heard in some of the other clinics. So most people I've spoken to came here, lined up, and got a ticket. Some were here as early as 12 o'clock, even though they didn't start opening the doors and processing those tickets until 2:30. So they were given a ticket. That lineup moved really quickly, and they were told when to come back, depending, obviously, on the number of that ticket. However, due to some delays and the processing time, it's really a rough estimate. And so the people who have come back, who were told to come back, say, at 4 o'clock or at 4:30 are being told it's going to be about another hour and a half. So those people are going to be here, not going to be processed until about 6 o'clock, and then obviously we go from there. And so they're not taking anybody else here. The signs everywhere say, you know, flu clinic closed. So you can imagine
it's full. It's full.
It is full to capacity. If you can imagine all the people coming back in the Walter Baker Arena up here on the second floor is absolutely jam-packed.
And that is a continuing source of frustration, surely, for people that you talk to, Anna. I mean, the simple fact is this is a clinic that was supposed to run from 2:30 until 8:30, and yet minutes after it opens, it's full.
Well, what I think is also frustrating from what I'm hearing is that that not only are you coming in to line up at the second time, but you were here earlier the first time. So for some people, for example, some stay-at-home moms, getting here the first time then coming back makes a bit more sense. But for some people who wanted to come after work, that's a more difficult scenario because they couldn't be here at 12 to get in for the ticket. So that, I think, is what is I'm hearing a lot of. Should also mention, though, Rob, a couple of developments. I was at a press conference earlier this afternoon with Dr. Israel Levy. There were a couple things that I think would be of interest. One of them is that we were told that there's sort of a mini evaluation process taking on today. And what that means is that because all the centers are operating on a different way, some have the computer electronic system that they're filing people through. Others are working on only a paper record. They're all slightly different. What they're doing is taking the processes and today going to have a look at how the wait times are affected depending on what process each of the clinics are using and probably deciding from that within a couple of days of which one is the most effective and probably then implementing that wherever, whichever one is, it makes the most amount of sense. So they are looking at the ways that the wait times are being affected at each of the flu clinics.
So here that they're 3 days into this and now they might have a better idea. What is the most effective way to get people to fill out the paperwork, to register people, get the shots so that they can continually... I mean, this is going to be a 5-week program.
Yeah, this is not something that's done in a few days.
Yeah, so they do have some time to work out the kinks, so to speak.
Absolutely, okay. Yeah.
But again, the key message is right now, the Walter Baker Center in Barrhaven, that was one of the roving clinics that was open today. It's not accepting anybody right now. It's full.
It's full for the day.
Yeah, and it's the same story for the Fred Barrett Arena as well because of volume issues. That was the other roving clinic today. Thank you so much for the update, Anna.
Thank you, Rob.
Anna on scene at the Walter Baker Center in Barrhaven. very quickly at the Tom Brown Arena on Bayview, the latest that we have as of about an hour ago from the city of Ottawa. The wait there is 90 minutes. In Kanata, it is a three-hour wait for the Kanata Clinic. And the latest that we have on the Constellation Clinic, that is the evening clinic that just opened, we have 200 people in the line there. That runs 5 to 9, but we don't have any information on whether it is too late to actually go to the Constellation Clinic. We're trying to get the latest that we can from Ottawa Public Health, and we'll bring it to you as soon as we have the very latest information. And there you go. The Kanata Clinic just closed its doors. So the information is coming in. We're giving it to you here at 580 CFRA. And more of your phone calls for Dr. Barry Dworkin, more emails for Dr. Barry Dworkin. And in fact, when we come back, an emailer says, Dr. Dworkin, last week on the Wednesday House Call, you had a really good explanation of how the virus does its dirty work using a beach ball and a sand and sand on the ball. And a caller wants you to go through that explanation again. So we'll do that. So we'll do that when we come back.
Now, back to a special edition of the Wednesday House Call on 580 CFRA with Rob Snow and Dr. Barry Dworkin, H1N1. What you need to know to protect yourself and your family.
Dr. Dworkin.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify about that when I made the statement about children in the U.S. and the H1N1 dying from H1N1 compared to seasonal flu. It's found in the Center for Disease Control Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Review Report. But I wanted to be a bit more accurate about this because I was giving actual numbers when really this was a rate. So I think it's important. Again, I want to clarify this. The numbers that they had in the United States as of September the 3rd, 2009, in the weekly report, they had a million illnesses of million people who had H1N1, most of them mild, 550 deaths, so really quite a low number compared to seasonal flu. So again, we have to keep that in perspective. And about 8,800 hospitalizations. Still a fair number of people when you consider the resources that go into taking care of people. What they did state, though, with regards to children is that there were a much greater proportion. CDC officials said that it was likely true, seems to be true, that a higher proportion of deaths from swine flu was found in children than normally from seasonal flu, based on the numbers that they were seeing. So I just wanted to clarify that so people had more accurate information. And I apologize if from previous statement, I had to read this again just to make sure, because there was something niggling in my mind and I don't like misleading
Certainly.
Anybody.
But that dovetails with an email that we received from Alan, who writes, Dr. Dworkin, I wonder about the statistics that show the 65 and over group as having lower incidence of the H1N1 influenza. Mm-hmm. What may be affecting the number of incidences of H1N1 in older people?
The hypothesis that is being proposed is if someone is not becoming infected compared to another group, logically, you would assume that their body has the capacity to fight off that infection. And one of the ways to fight off that infection is if you had been previously exposed to a variant of that. Remember, this H1N1 strain is different in genetic structure compared to that existed between 1918 through to 1957. That being said, there may be enough similarity in that particular exposure between 1918 and 1957, if someone was alive during that time, that it is conferring enough of an immune response to create mild disease. Other factors to consider is reporting of the disease as well. So we have to assume that there's complete reporting. If there's not complete reporting, that would also give rise to a lower number. So there's that aspect as well. So those are the hypotheses, not proven, but that's the numbers that are coming in right now. And trying to find an explanation, that will require more work to figure that out. But this is what we're seeing from a new number perspective in terms of the population that is affected more, being younger individuals versus the older folks in our population.
Just want to bring people the latest wait times that we have. The Tom Brown Arena Clinic, the wait is 90 minutes. The Constellation Clinic, which just opened, we're just waiting for a call from Ottawa Public Health on the wait time there. The last time we checked, there were 200 people in the line. That is the evening clinic on Constellation that runs from 5 until 9. The Fred Bear Clinic is closed for the day, not accepting anyone else. That's the same with the roving clinic at the Walter Baker Arena in Barrhaven, not accepting anyone else for the day. And the Kanata Clinic as well is at the Kanata Recreation Complex on Walter Baker Drive in Kanata, not accepting anyone else, closed for the day, keeping in mind all of these clinics have been open for 3 hours and are supposed to stay open until 8:30. However, because of the lines, can't see anyone else today. More of your calls for Dr. Dworkin coming up after the 5:30 news.
Now, back to a special edition of the Wednesday House Call on 580 CFRA with Rob Snow and Dr. Barry Dworkin, H1N1. What you need to know to protect yourself and your family.
And right back to the phone lines we go. A number of people have been waiting quite some time, doctors, you can imagine, mm-hmm. to ask you a question. Andre.
Wow. Hello?
I know, Andre. Long wait, but thanks for waiting.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, your phone system works because it definitely holds my call for a while. Dr. Dworkin, are you familiar with G6PD enzyme?
Yes.
Okay. Well, because we decided, my wife and I and my two-year-old son, we're going to get the H1N1 shot. But he has a G6PD
deficiency.
That's right. And we were at hematology at CHEO last year getting some checkups and things like that, and everything's cool. But we called them a couple of days ago just to ask their advice on whether there may be any kind of reaction with that shot, with any of the flu shots,
mm-hmm.
And his deficiency. And we feel they gave just the regular answer of yeah, everybody get it, you know.
Right.
Just the overall kind of consensus. Yeah, I don't care who you are and what you got and all that kind of stuff. Just take it. But, I mean, we do have to be careful because there's certain medications and certain ingredients and foods and things like that that he can't take. Do you, well, with your knowledge on G6PD and the ingredients in the shots, what's your recommendation?
Well, as with many common common conditions and even rarer conditions, the glucose 6-phosphate deficiency, phosphatase deficiency, is it's a rarer condition. But again, with this particular deficiency, the compound that this enzyme is supposed to work on, if you give too much of it, it can affect them because they don't have the enzyme to do what needs to be done with it. However, when looking at diseases that people have, and how the flu shot works, and this segues into what I'll be discussing a little bit later after we get through some of the calls. The flu shot itself doesn't have any ingredients that will go into that pathway.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, the shot does not exacerbate the condition because what you have in it is pieces of protein of the virus that is dead. I mean, there's no real virus in there. It's simply small pieces of protein that the body then recognizes, attacks, and then destroys, and in the process of destroying it, produces antibodies. So what you're looking at in terms of response or reaction is if he, for example, got a cold or if he got a small illness, his immune system would respond and fight off that illness.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar in this regard, except there's no virus to cause the illness. It's simply the proteins that his body will respond to. The other thing to keep in mind is that, again, there's no ingredients in there that's going to interfere with the 6PD deficiency. The G6 deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, there's nothing in it that is going to overstimulate him. So you're not going to see anything other than him fighting off the destroying the vaccine and developing an immunity to it. It won't interfere with the underlying medical condition he has because it has no relation to that pathway at all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Andre?
Okay.
Thank you for waiting. Okay. Much appreciated. We have a number of calls that we want to get to in this half hour of our program. Tanya.
Yes, hello.
Hi, Tanya. Thank you for waiting.
Hi. Yes. I'm sorry, though. I had one question. Now I have three, but they're very short. So first question is it true that the amount of mercury in the one dose of vaccine is less than in a tuna sandwich?
That is correct. And in fact, though, when you look at the type of mercury that's in the vaccine, that is different from the mercury that's in the tuna fish.
The mercury
that's in the tuna fish is methylmercury, which is the more toxic form of the mercury because it's cleared very slowly out of the body.
44 days.
Yep. I've heard that explanation very clearly.
Right.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
So next question is, have you heard of any bad adverse side effects so far in children? And if not, when would you notice any neurological type of side effect.
When would we, if people are going to have an adverse reaction, would they have that right away? Would it take many, many days, many weeks?
Usually,
what would be your best guess?
Adverse reactions that you have immediate and long term. Immediate would be sore arm, fever, chills, fatigue.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, we took an email to that effect that it passed very quickly.
You can have red eyes as well. It's
an
ocular condition
about,
that can happen.
I'm talking about serious neurological.
So if you're looking at Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is the syndrome everybody is concerned about, it doesn't occur in children. Guillain-Barré does not affect children. It's an adult disease.
Oh, okay.
So it does not affect children. And the normal rate for Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is a progressive paralytic disease, starts from the feet, moves up towards the chest and the arms, and then reverses itself. Some people do have lingering neurological deficiencies afterwards. A lot of people recover. The normal rate in Canada is, and the United States, is 1 to 2 people per 100,000 develop Guillain-Barré, irrespective of anything. That's just the rate of the disease.
It just happens.
It just happens.
It just happens, yes.
And the relationship with Guillain-Barré and the flu came from 1976 when there was a swine flu outbreak at Fort Dix in New Jersey. It was a military base in January of 1976. Thereafter, they...
It affected about 8 people, I believe.
Yeah, it affected some of them there, and then it disappeared. It didn't spread off the base. It stayed on the base. But then the United States instituted a New Jersey strain of the swine flu in 1976, and 45 million doses were distributed. What they found between October and December 1976 was an increased number of Guillain-Barré syndrome. They found that it was 500 cases of Guillain-Barré syndrome, which was found 6 to 8 weeks after the vaccination, which was 4 to 8 times the increased risk that you normally saw. That was the only time you saw that. Subsequent flu vaccines that followed thereafter did not show anything of that rate. And in fact, it went from virtually nothing to 1 in 1,000,000. So that's where we stand now with Guillain-Barré.
Very quickly, you had one final question,
yes,
Daniel.
Final question about squalene.
Yes.
If you're saying that it's a natural product that our body is producing,
yes,
then why is there such a worry about this adjuvant for pregnant women? And also,
why such a worry for pregnant women?
If it's a natural product and it's harmful, why officials worry about it, why there was such a big deal about it?
Okay. Well, as I mentioned earlier, with regards to pregnancy and the use of an adjuvant vaccine versus a non-adjuvant vaccine, we always look at, and when treating and considering therapies for people, what is the least risky? Not necessarily the most harmful, but the least potential risk. We're talking about risk. So with regards to pregnancy, if the environment around a woman who is pregnant is such that there is a significant outbreak of H1N1 infection, the risk to her, especially if she is after 20 weeks gestation, the risk to her pregnancy, if she were to get infected, would be very high. Increased risk of miscarriage and premature labor and premature delivery. So you are faced then with the situation of taking an adjuvant vaccine and knowing that for most people, obviously people who aren't pregnant because you can't do the research on pregnant women, for most people, in fact, all people that have taken the vaccine, the squalene has not done anything to them. There's been no evidence that it causes any harm. You can't do tests on pregnant women. You can only extrapolate effects. So in a situation where there is a risk of infection, where the risk to the pregnancy is greater than any theoretical risk of the adjuvant, you would give the adjuvant. In a situation where the woman is in an environment where there isn't much infection, then the risk to her is low. So then you would use you would wait for the non-adjuvant because there's no impending need to use anything. It's simply a risk management effect. It's not the concern that the adjuvant is going to cause harm. It's simply you always, when you're treating someone, do things that offer the least risk to the person based on their situation.
Thank you so much for those questions again, Tanya. And we'll get back to more of your phone calls for Dr. Barry Dworkin and this special edition of the Wednesday House Call on 580 CFRA.
Now, back to a special edition of the Wednesday House Call on 580 CFRA with Rob Snow and Dr. Barry Dworkin, H1N1. What you need to know to protect yourself and your family.
And up next on line three with another question for Dr. Barry Dworkin is Alberta.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi.
A question regarding the waves. It's my understanding we're in the second wave and there's still another wave to come. How long is the second wave expected to last? And will the third one be lighter or do we know?
These are all unknown answers. And we don't know how long the wave is going to last. Usually waves, if my memory serves correct, and I would have to look this up to see what the average is, but depends on the strain, the virulence of the strain. Waves can last for weeks, sometimes months. There can be weeks or months in between.
Is she correct to say that we are in the second wave?
This is the second wave.
Okay.
There is the expectation that there will be a third wave after this. The waves tend to be less severe. There's usually a peak wave, and then it tends to be less severe over time. And you may get several waves after that. And the reason they become less severe is depends on the proportion of your population that has become infected. And the more people you have in one wave, obviously they become immune, so you see less and less in subsequent waves. So we don't know the answer to that. We do know that the behavior of flu viruses is that it does come in waves.
But you would think if you vaccinated tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people, those vaccinations to take effect 10 days, that would lessen
right.
the next wave.
That would
right?
lessen yeah. the chance because you're insulating people from infection, insulating the transmission of infection. So yes, you would reduce the risk of spreading it and having a much more or a greater population affected during that subsequent wave.
Julie on line four.
Hello.
Hi, Julie.
Hi. My mother had a very severe Guillain-Barré syndrome,
mm-hmm.
and as well, I have a cousin on the same side of the family, on my mother's side of the family, that had a Guillain-Barré syndrome. My question is, with my family history, would I be at an increased risk to contact GBS if I took the H1N1 vaccine?
My understanding of GBS is that it's a personal history of Guillain-Barré syndrome that would make it contraindicated for you to have the flu vaccine. Family history, not necessarily so. And the reason is that it is hypothesized to be a reaction to an infection. There was some link to an intestinal bacteria in some people, I believe it was Campylobacter jejuni or C. jejuni, that was responsible for exacerbating Guillain-Barré syndrome.
Okay.
So you're dealing with an infectious cause, not a genetic cause for the disease. So in that case, the evidence says that if you have no personal history, then you can go ahead.
That's
and have
what
that
they look at, personal history versus family history.
It's then. Personal history.
Okay.
If you've had a neurological degenerative disease such as Guillain-Barré, not recommended for you to have.
Dr. Barry Dworkin has agreed that we will not leave this topic until we take all the phone calls that we can and read all the emails that we can, the more information that we want to deliver for you on wait times at clinics and whatnot. So he is going to be here until 7 o'clock now. Appreciate you doing that for us,
You're
Dr. Dworkin. So more of your phone calls coming up after the 6 o'clock news with Dr. Barry Dworkin, CFRA's health specialist. I'm Rob Snow.